So welcome y'all to the mobile development open Q&A. Open Q&A means, as you might expect, that it's open. You guys can totally ask questions. You can ask questions about anything. You can ask questions about the Embednator 4000. You can ask questions about best practices. You can ask questions about roadmap, whatever you like. It's all fair game. My name is Ryan J. Salva. I'll be your moderator for the day. I am joined here. Actually, let's go down the line. Miguel, introduce yourself.
Yes, I run the engineering group for Xamarin Platform. So we do the C# tools and .NET tools for targeting Android, iOS, Mac, and I also run VS for Mac. So those are my two things.
Right, and you also come to us from the fabled, the legend Xamarin. Yeah. Yes.
I used to be a Linux developer also many years ago.
Many years. All right.
And an outlaw in certain countries.
Are you going to start developing using Linux on Windows?
I've actually started to. Yeah, I got my creator's update. I have. I don't have the new thing, but I have Ubuntu. So I've been actually hacking on my. I have a little side project on the side, and I've been hacking on it on Linux on Windows.
He runs multiple teams and still has time for side projects.
Dog fooding.
All right.
Got it.
And next on down the line.
I am Keith Ballinger. I also come from Xamarin, where I was the VP of product. And now I run the product team for what's called Visual Studio Mobile Center, which is a bunch of cloud services for doing DevOps and back-end services and crash reporting, mobile analytics, and all that kind of fun stuff.
Fantastic. All right, cool. Thomas.
I'm Thomas Domke. I'm the co-founder of HockeyApp. I joined Microsoft through the HockeyApp acquisition. And I'm now the GPM for Visual Studio Mobile Center. And then what else do we do? Xamarin Test Cloud, Azure Mobile Engagement, Azure Notification Hubs, HockeyApp, of course.
Yeah. All right. The man, the myth, the legend.
I'm James. I'm James Montemagno. I'm a principal program manager here at Microsoft for the entire mobile developer tool suite. And what that essentially means is like anything in the Xamarin ecosystem, building apps, creating apps, testing apps, putting stuff in Mobile Center, but also the amazing integrations. So when you're going to look at Azure AD or DocumentDB, and I work closely with those teams to ensure that you have an amazing development experience. I also come from the Xamarin acquisition. All four of us on the panel all come from acquisition.
We're all acquired. We're all fresh
all
blood.
Acquired.
Yep, the
all,
mobile development
all
team.
Sold
yeah.
All right.
That's a good sign. Well, and I was there for 4 years, and 2 years before that, I was a developer writing Xamarin apps. So I've been doing it for like 7 years now. It's crazy. Every time I keep adding a year on, and it's just bananas to think about. You know, that's me.
All right, cool. So now that we are all besties, we can all feel free to have a little bit of a conversation here. As you guys could tell already, there's a lot of love among the four kind of panelists here. We are here to answer your questions. Does anyone want to kick it off? I'm happy to start asking questions, but
there's
I bet you guys are already itching. We got one over here.
Hello. I wondered where you define the boundary of mobile, and is there a useful definition there? Is it useful to say, this is what mobile is? It's only Android and phone and iOS? Or if it goes to things like the desktop as well? Good. And at which point, is it just client app dev, or is mobile dev different to other things?
That's brilliant. All right.
I have an opinion.
Thomas, you want to take that one?
So my opinion is, I would say Microsoft has no unified opinion. My own opinion is everything that can install an app is mobile.
Yeah, I mean, I look at my backpack here. I have an Android phone and my iPad. I have a Windows PC. I have a MacBook Adorable. I take my MacBook Adorable with me everywhere. It's rose gold. It's a stunning piece of hardware.
That really matters.
I think the word that you're looking for is totes adorbs.
It's toast, super toasty, super adorbs. So to me, as an app developer, I've always wanted the ability to make apps for any of my users on any single platform that they were using. And I think through a lot of the sessions, whether it's the keynote or the sessions or the tooling that we're building, we're really enabling that. So to me, mobile is any single piece of technology, even if it's a little Raspberry Pi. Like to me, that is mobile development. We're all in a moving space. I mean, I still have a desktop gaming machine, so I guess that's not mobile. I mean, it is, except for it's very heavy.
This is the thing, right? Even a giant 84-inch Surface Hub.
Yeah.
Installing an app on that and how you build that app and how you get that app on that Surface Hub, that has more in common with how you get an app on a iPhone than it does with a 30 microserviced 40 database set of REST APIs that you're deploying into a bunch of containers. That's way different, but that Surface Hub and that iPhone, they have a lot in common. And that's like mobile's just, I think, a word that we've come up with to indicate this kind of rich client app thing that, you know, you have to install, that you can't just update everybody with one fail swoop, and that has all these kind of constraints around form factor and all kinds of stuff that's not, it's very, very different than, say, services.
All right, cool.
I'm curious if your opinion reflects Microsoft's opinion, and if that is going to change the way Microsoft thinks about it, because at the moment it feels like mobile is a separate thing to desktop development, or...
So you're really asking, is UWP development really considered mobile development in a way? Is that kind of what you're asking?
No, or I'm trying to understand.
Can you get closer to the microphone? I can barely hear you.
Sorry, I'm trying to understand if there's going to be a this perceived difference between the bit that was Xamarin and the bit that's Windows, if that's going to go away.
Let me try to address that. I think what we have right now is a very diverse ecosystem of devices that people are using. And it ranges in terms of form factor, input mechanism, output mechanism. They touched on the keynote today. Now, virtual reality, now it's a blend of things. It's not just one. You got augmented reality, and you can get it with headsets or with phones. So it's a blend of input, output, form factor, sizes. How do you access them? Do you have them on the kitchen as a stand thing, or is it a tiny Amazon device? Is it a 35 thing that you hook up to your TV? And there are good reasons to target these platforms, right? And everyone historically has had their own SDKs, their own platforms. It's a very diverse world. And I think that as long as those markets were small, it didn't matter if you had to program with a specific C++ API, say a BlackBerry, or if you had to use assembly language for the Palm Pilot. You know, there were small enough markets that it didn't matter. But today, you need to reach the customers in a wide spectrum of places, right? And all of these devices, and also, so you need to reach them. The business needs to reach out, right? You need to have a facade that is close to the customer, delivering services, capturing revenue, you know, giving them data, things that matter to them, keeping them close to you. And you have choices, right? You can still build 10 of these things, right? And there's more of these things popping up every day. And we think that one thing that matters very much is that we can share a lot of the code that helps you bring the business to people with .NET. There's other ways of doing it, but we're doing it with .NET, right? So you got a .NET core, and then you build facades for each one of these form factors. Some of them might not have any UI. It might just have a LED light, right? Like the Raspberry Pi, we announced IoT support, for example. Some of them will be phones that we're familiar with. Other ones will be speaker things. Other ones will have no screens. Other ones will be on the TV. So it is about helping businesses reach customers where they are and keeping a connection with the customer. At the end of the day, is what you want as a business, right? Or as a government trying to provide services or healthcare providers, you need a connection with the user. We live in a connected world, and you need to reach the users where they are. So we will give you the tools to be there, and hopefully we'll make a good enough case and we'll do a good enough job that you'll host all your data and your services on Azure.
Does that answer your question?
I think so. Yeah.
All right. We got another brave soul. All right, we got one right here. Do you mind stepping up to the microphone? Last one. We now have a line, so we got. Since you're already at the mic, we'll let you go first.
All right. So my question is about talking about reaching the customer, right? And one place the customer goes is the web browser. So. Is there any plans of extending the .NET into the web browser in some way?
.NET already reaches a web browser. There's a technology called ASP.NET that gets you there. Now, you might be laughing, but...
UI perspective, too.
Yes, you might be laughing, but... I'm very serious. Here's what happens. I don't think that you can take... I mean, you can. You can. It's just, I don't think that you should take a code base that has been designed for a form factor and shove it into another form factor. You certainly can, but it's not a good experience. It doesn't drive engagement. You're making your users miserable, right? So I think that you need to embrace the medium, right? In some cases, you can share some code, like Android and iOS, very similar things. But if you're building a tvOS application and an Android application for a phone, I think you need to embrace every medium. Input in the TV is painful. Don't do input on the TV. And when you do the web, you gotta embrace the web. And you gotta embrace both the mobile web and you gotta embrace the desktop web. So I think that for each one of these platforms, you gotta embrace the target platform. Now, we don't have a way of taking your .NET code today and put it on a web page. I mean, we can't do that. What we can do is we can provide all the services on the back end and the REST endpoints with ASP.NET so you can build the right experience using Angular or React or jQuery, whatever you want. But I think that you need to build experiences that are specific to each form factor and responds to the proper input, the proper output, and the proper sensors of each device.
So WebAssembly is not anywhere near?
Well, that is a separate question, and I can answer that we are building WebAssembly, but we are building WebAssembly in a narrow sense, and that sense is there is a set of users, in particular the gaming industry, that is betting hard on WebAssembly as a mechanism for delivering games to the web. And games, Unity essentially popularized C# as a way of scripting games, so we are putting WebAssembly we're putting .NET on WebAssembly, but the focus is the gaming people. Now, maybe you will be able to use the DOM as well. Well, you will be able to, but I don't know if it's going to be a pleasant experience, right? This is, at this point, mostly for the game crowd.
See, I think when you were talking about shoving a form factor into another form factor, I remember going to a conference in Vegas, and everyone had, like, these iPads. It was MGM, one of the big ones. They all had iPads to check you in, and it was literally, actually, like, they were like, all right, we'll be fancy with an iPad. They didn't, like, create an iPad app. It was, like, a browser, like, into a remote VM, and it was the grossest, like, craziest thing ever. And every single one of those people were trying to check in. They hated their lives. They're just like, I can't figure it out because they're shoving this form factor in this iPad that didn't make any sense. That's the same with the web. It's like, yeah, could you build some abstraction of user interface? Is that what's in shoehorn that into a back end for like forms or something? Yeah, totally. I mean, it's open source. Someone could totally do that today. Is it going to make you the best world class, cutting edge website? You're not crafting it for your user. So I think at some point there is totally some way of doing some cross platform thing, but it's like, I don't know when that is, or if that's really what's best.
Well,
because the form factors are so different, right?
It's a little bit different between website and web app, right? Mm-hmm. Because, website is, if you do SEO or stuff like that, right? So when it's a web app, though, it has some kind of, data over forms and all these kinds of stuff, right? Isn't it similar to what you're doing with Xamarin Forms, right? Adapting. Rendering abstraction into different devices.
So
one of the devices be a web browser?
Yeah. I think that James answered the question. The answer, it can be done. We should certainly explore it. I don't think that right now there's an answer. I personally don't think that the experience is going to be good because of the way where the web develops, but it's an option.
I think you're asking a question that's kind of similar to the last guy, which is the web a natural extension of mobile, right? How do we kind of distinguish those? So, like Keith and Thomas, you guys are working on a product that is essentially a kind of a DevOps solution for mobile applications. Like, is it a roadmap item for you to help reach mobile web developers? Because today, what do you guys support today?
Yeah, so today we support iOS and Android and now UWP, built with whatever technology people want for apps. We get some queries about web apps, right? People want, for instance, we have Test Cloud, and people want to be able to test mobile web applications along with their rich client applications. So it comes up, but in general, I would say our focus is on these rich client applications and not, say, on mobile websites, that kind of thing.
Based up. All right, cool. All right, so we have a queue back here. So the audience is clamoring. Let's hear it.
So when can we expect to start seeing XAML standard in mobile applications? And then I had a second part, but I forgot.
Well, I can answer that part. We don't know yet. It's going to take a while. XAML standard is really about, think of it as a PNG file. Just like you have Android can load PNG files and iOS can load PNG files, XAML standard is about, instead of describing an image at the pixel level, it describes it at the control level, right? But in the meantime, if you care about Android and iOS, and those are your target platforms, then just use XAML forms. Because XAML standard in the end is a subset of that. So it doesn't cover everything that forms does.
Right.
Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right.
And then we jumped to test flight several years ago after Apple bought test flight. I'm sorry, we jumped to Hockey App after Apple bought test flight. And I know they're not an easy company to work with, but is there any headway being made there to help streamline the experience for someone that's targeting multiple platforms and then using Hockey App?
Or you mean like getting it into the App Store? Or getting like into test flight somehow from your DevOps cycle?
I guess maybe more integration between Hockey App and then the Apple Developer Console and the mess of settings that they have there.
Yeah, okay. Certainly. I mean, we announced today that we will have Store Submit. So we'll be able to submit your app for Mobile Center into Google Play, into the App Store, into the Windows Store, including their flooding. So Test Flight is just the flooding mechanism for the Apple Store. So you will be able to submit your app from Mobile Center into Test Flight and then from there into the real App Store.
Okay.
And as part of this, we're also looking into automating the UDID collection process, your provisioning profile process.
That's fantastic. That's actually
Thomas, can you take a moment to explain the relationship between Hockey App and Mobile Center for those people that may not know it?
Yeah, sure. So Mobile Center effectively is the next generation of Hockey App. When Xamarin came to Microsoft last year, Keith and I sat together. It was maybe about a year ago. And basically, we had Test Cloud, we had Hockey App, we had Xamarin Insights, and we were thinking, so what are we doing with those products? And we kind of like came up with, back then the vision was called App Hub. And that's kind of describing it a little bit better, I think, than Mobile Center, actually. It's basically everything that you need as an app developer together in one product, and that is Mobile Center today. And the Mobile Center is still preview, so we are kind of in the transition phase between those old legacy products and the new Microsoft product. And so later this month, in the coming months, we will have what we call internally side-by-side solutions. So you will be able to see your Hockey App apps in Mobile Center and then add those new services to your existing Hockey App apps.
And the cool thing, too, is if you're already using something like Visual Studio Team Services or TFS on-prem, for instance, you can already build iOS and Android and Xamarin and UWP apps. You've always been able to submit them to Hockey App. They recently, in the last few months or so, last 6 months, they added Google Play support and app service or Apple App Store to send it to Test Flight. And additionally, what's really cool is that the Mobile Center team, when they were building their APIs, what I love about working with this team is that everything is API first. Like, you have the API in your hands. So when they're like, hey, we have a new distribution model, we have all this stuff, they actually already have extension points into VSTS and things like that. So as you're slowly migrating bits and pieces into Mobile Center, you already have an existing pipeline, you can do that today, which is really cool. So that kind of release management, release management? Do you have any release management in the new stuff? How does the new distribution stuff work? I saw a slide.
Well, an API endpoint.
Can you describe maybe a little bit of how the distribution works?
So Team Services thinks about it as build, code, work items, and so on. We think about what you're actually doing with those things, right? So we think build, test, distribute.
Yeah.
So the distribution feature has distribution groups, which are your internal or external testers, and then we have store connectors, so you literally can promote a build from a test group into the store group.
Got it.
So your store is like the distribution group, right?
Where
you kind of could have a test type group or a Google Play alpha and beta group, and then you can also submit to the store.
Sounds exactly like how I would have implemented it. Perfect, good work. There you go. Yeah, and that's actually a super powerful feature. We were developing the live player, and we were doing nightly builds and distributing it all in-house, and then we're able to publish it immediately out into Google Play, and then I literally this morning toggled the switch and pushed it.
And it's not only the live player. I think one of the cool things that happened at Microsoft after Microsoft acquired Hockey App is that basically every single Microsoft app is using Hockey App, and even Satya on his iPhone is able to download daily or hourly builds of those apps. And so you're kind of bridging the gap between the product teams and your senior leadership team, and all of a sudden the senior leadership team can install a build from a developer that they never talked to, right? So you're kind of bridging the gap. And we love it.
I always have to be careful because I always open up Hockey App sometimes on my phone. And if I'm screen mirroring, you can see some kind of internal
bits. Oh, you should not do that.
Yeah, that's not a good idea. But I've been pretty good.
All right, cool. All right, let's take next question here.
Hi, guys. So I actually had two questions. I hope you can answer them pretty quickly and they're really easy for you. So the first one would actually be, I'm looking for like a best practices. We are creating business critical applications and we're using push notifications for that. We're currently using Google Cloud Messaging / Firebase, but it hasn't been good enough for us. So there are a lot of other options in order to do push notifications, making like a 100% delivery guarantee. Do you have any knowledge about that part?
Keith, can you take this one?
Yeah, so I guess it depends on your scenario, right? Mm-hmm. So there's two main ways people are using push notifications today. One is they're doing something like what I usually call like transactional or logic-based push notifications. You know, the classic example is if somebody just sends you a message in some kind of messaging app, you get a push notification that you got a new message. It's being sent directly to you based on some kind of business logic. Mm-hmm. The other way people use push notifications is what you know, generally are called like campaigns or engagement, where you want to create something where you're saying, you know what, all of my users who haven't used the app in 30 days in the you know in the state of California, I want to send them a push notification reminding them to come back into my app or offering them a coupon or somehow enticing them. And those two things have kind of different requirements and characteristics. Mm-hmm. In the engagement world, reliable delivery is less of an issue, right? Many of those people, for instance, if you're trying to bring them back in, they may have uninstalled your app, so there's just nothing you can do. Yeah. It's more on that transactional side, mm-hmm. where you're looking for something like a reliable messaging protocol. And so in general, there isn't any, I've yet to see any product or service from anybody, whether it's ourselves or Google or anybody else, that implements the reliable messaging because it's embedded with the logic of why you're sending that person a message. Mm-hmm. So when I built, I had a startup called Ravid that was mobile video messaging, where you literally record a video and you'd send it to somebody else. And a push message was a part of that experience. And I couldn't have used a third product to do that reliably. I had to build my own kind of reliable messaging protocol to make that work because I had a row in a table somewhere mm-hmm. that represented that video message going from one phone to another phone. And I needed to update that table mm-hmm. to say things like, I've sent the push message, and the push message has been seen, and so forth.
Yeah, it's like a feedback loop.
Yes, exactly. You need to kind of act that the message has been received. Mm-hmm. So if you use something like Mobile Center, you can use our API mm-hmm. to send a push message from one person to another. Mm-hmm. You can also use it for the campaigns and engagement. Mm-hmm. If you use it for the one person to another API, and say you call it from your back-end .NET app or Node app or whatever, you can send in the API custom values. So those custom values can be things like the ID of that table, mm-hmm. and then on the other device that's receiving it, when it receives the notification, you can send back a message saying, I've seen this particular message ID, let's go update the table.
Yeah.
And you can do things like, oh, I'm gonna have a timer fire off in an hour if I haven't seen that update happen, and try again, and things
exactly.
like that.
So that's exactly what we already did. So we already built that feedback loop and everything. And that's why when we noticed that GCM isn't reliable enough,
yep.
So that's when we're looking at other protocols like MQTT that does support like the more live feedback and everything, because our applications are that business crucial that we need to have like a response within 5 minutes, mm-hmm. and that's really hard.
Yeah, in those cases, oftentimes I think you have to, if it's literally business critical, mm-hmm. a push notification is unlikely to be the right thing to do.
Okay.
Generally speaking, you're going to want something embedded in your app, mm-hmm. like you know either the existing message protocols or something that kind of fits your logic.
Okay.
Yeah, on Android, you just want a background service that if you own the devices, it's super simple. You have a background service that's always running, always listening, and doing stuff. Mm-hmm. iOS is going to be very complicated because iOS.
Oh, okay.
I mean, for backgrounding stuff, it's under lock and key, right?
Yeah.
You only get so much time to response, and Apple push notification service, there is no guarantee. Like they're just, and it, if you send too many of them too quick, mm-hmm. they'll they have the ability to throttle you unless you're something like a Snapchat, right? Where you kind of get whitelisted, where it's just like, oh, whatever. I've never had problems with GCM or Firebase so far. They've been pretty reliable. But it also depends, like, what if someone turns off the device? Like, you also have to, like, your service literally isn't working. So actually a mixture of them is really good, I feel. Because when we were implementing KinderChat, yes. great application, it's open source, we did that. We had our own, like, when the apps were open, they were communicating, just like you'd expect in Slack or something, you would be typing, mm-hmm. and or Teams. and you'd be typing, and the little thing would come up that they're typing. So that's like kind of a real network back and forth. Mm-hmm. Whereas if my phone is off when I go up, I still want to know that Miguel is getting pizza later tonight, you know, and he sent me that message. So both of those are equally important.
Yeah.
In general, and then just handling when that's in. It's a very complicated process, but that's my recommendation is a mixture.
Yeah, at least it's an answer I can build with. So building on that answer, because we know that, like I said, we built a feedback loop, and we're using application insights on Azure to check what's going on, and we're using still Xamarin Insight on the client side. It has a beautiful UI, so that's a good thing. But so we have telemetry on two places. Is it is it somehow in the future that we can be in one place?
Thomas?
I'll turn to Thomas. Thomas, how does that work? What if I also have Hockey App data?
So if you have Hockey App data today, you can bridge it into Application Insights with the Application Insights Hockey App Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So we will look into something similar for Mobile Center and Application Insights. There will be no solution for Xamarin Insights anymore.
That's okay.
But basically, the similar approach that we took with Hockey App data into Application Insights, we will take with Mobile Center somewhere in the future.
Okay, we'll see you then. Thank you, guys.
Cool. All right, next.
All right. Hello. We were talking about multiple platforms in the first couple of questions, and when I saw Miguel's talk, I saw the word Linux on the slide, and when I went to the forums presentation, I saw about deployment platforms for Linux, WPF, and Tizen.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that I will be able to write a .NET app with XAML and have it work on Linux, or
yes.
Did I see something else?
Yes, that's exactly what it means.
That's what you saw. Yeah, well, you're writing it with XAML and the Xamarin Forms SDK tooling around it. So the schema that you're writing is Xamarin Forms schema, and then in the future, whenever XAML standard is out, you can mix and match those worlds together.
Okay.
So essentially, they call them backends, but they're kind of really front ends. So whenever they say backends, I'm like, no, it's a user interface. It's graphical. It's a GUI front end. But to us, it's a backend because we're implementing the SDK. So you write that. Now, what's unique there is that on Linux, they were using GTK Sharp. So it is rendering. So you're writing a XAML button, and then what shows up on that Linux or Mac or iOS device is the native user interface.
Okay. Can I write something once that would work, like render as WPF on Windows and render
That's exactly
on
how
Linux?
It works.
That's exactly
so the way
right.
that it works is that you target an API. The Forms API, when you say create a button, you're saying create a button on Forms. The reality is that depending on the platform, that API call actually creates on iOS, it creates a UI button. On Android, it creates a button. On UWP, and UWP creates a system.window.control.button. Mm-hmm. On GTK Sharp, it's going to create a GTK.button. On what's the other one? Tizen is going to create.
Tizen.
Well, they have their. They build the toolkit on Forms, so.
Lots of buttons.
It's actually implemented in Forms. So, essentially, you call button, but you get the native control on each platform, mm-hmm. right? So we don't draw. The only scenario where you do draw is Tizen, but that's because they chose to not have a toolkit in Tizen, and they chose Forms to be the actual API for Tizen. So the actual backend is implemented in Tizen.
And you have a solution. This is important. Is you have shared code. Mm-hmm. So your first. Your .NET standard library, your portable class libraries, your models, your view models, your RESTful service calls, your services, and your user interface in XAML. But you still have heads for all of them. So you still have an Android project with Xamarin, iOS. You'd have your Linux project with GTK Sharp. And then you'd have a Mac and UWP or WPF head on top of it. So you compile your app for each platform. So it's not a cross-compiled thing, right? It's compiled natively for each platform.
I have a question about this.
But you share code across
so,
all.
If it's GTK Sharp, which desktop technologies in the Linux world will that work with?
It works with all.
All
because
of them. Okay.
GTK Sharp, the way that Unix world takes a very agnostic view at everything. So you can run a GTK app on everything or a Qt app on everything. So it's just connecting to the backend server. And the backend server, again, could be X11,
gotcha.
could be the new, what is it called, Way.
I like how you look at me like I know anything about
it. Anyways, it can talk to anything.
I've never opened that.
Do you have to install additional things?
No, like it's a protocol. No, they have a protocol. It's called the X11 protocol. Ah. Okay, so you just pick a protocol.
It's just X11 in the end.
Yes.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
So if I know XAML, it'll work. I mean, I don't know. Do I need to go learn GTK to use this or just XAML?
No. So again, let me explain. Yeah. All you need to do is you create a bot. Let's say that you want to do a calculator. Well, you create a label and a forms label. A forms entry, forms label, forms entry, forms button. That's it. You wire up the button that when you click it, it will take the two values, they'll add them up and dump it in another result. That's it, right? So that's the code that you write. And now you compile it for each backend. You compile it for Linux, you compile it for iOS, you compile it for Android, you compile it for UWP, Tizen, and whatever's the other one, macOS, right?
Okay.
And then you get native binaries for each platform. And in each platform, it will, behind the scenes, you don't have to do anything at this point. It uses the native technology in every tech and every platform.
Will the .NET standard 2.0 be available to me?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes. But remember, in this scenario, you don't even need to bring .NET standard into the equation.
It doesn't even matter.
The reason why you need to have multiple heads is because of the packaging, right? When you build an iOS app is not just the program. It contains things like a manifest that says, "I need a machine with ARM64." I can run on every orientation. I support iPad or iPhone. I need a GPU with this capability. So there's a list of things that go. There's a payload that goes with your executable, right? So when you add these heads, the reality is that you're taking the binary, the executable that it's cross-platform, and then we're adding all these metadata pieces that each platform needs. So iOS has its metadata, Mac has its metadata, Mac requires a special layout, UWP needs a special packaging, right? So the heads take care of that, but your code is 100% the same, right?
Cool. All right, we got them lined up here. Knock it out.
Yes, my question was about what's your opinion about competition in mobile development. Clearly, if you look at PhoneGap, Ionic, that kind of stuff, they really have a different vision than Xamarin has, but looking at React Native, which is quite upcoming, what's your opinion on that?
My guess is we've got two very different perspectives on this, right? Because you got one team here on the services side and one team on the client side development.
So, no, I mean, right? I mean, in the end, it depends what your team is comfortable with, what you want to build, and the kind of application that you want to build, right? So there's a spectrum of things. You might have teams that only know HTML. And then it doesn't matter that we have a great C# solution. If you can't build C#, you can't build C#. So you're going to end up using something like PhoneGap or Cordova, right? Or maybe you need to rush something out. So you got to get the code base that you have on the web, and you need to target it there, right? The Amazon app, for example, it's a hybrid application. Some pieces are native, some pieces are HTML. And that's, you know, some of them are business demands, some of those are resourcing demands, some are constraints. So there's a world of things that will dictate how do you pick a technology, right? And the skills of your team, you might have a team that is experienced in JavaScript, you might have a team experienced in C#, you have a Java experienced team, right? So I think that will mandate some of those. Then there's a second concern. One might be things like performance, another might be memory usage, another might be availability and access to native APIs, right? Another one might be the ecosystem, components, code that you want to share. So there's a spectrum of things, and of course I would like you to use .NET, and that's why I work to make the offering as polished and complete as possible. But if you need to use something else, by all means, go and use something else.
Yeah,
right?
And also, if, like you said, some teams like are creating native apps or native apps with Xamarin, and they still may host some web content in it, right? Someone asked me, like, oh, well, what if I have a few pages of mobile content, can I put them into my Xamarin app? Of course you can. You can put anything in it. You have access to every single API, and we see that all the time. So it's a native hybrid application. And often what you see with, on the client side, before I'm sure you guys have a very vastly different, or at least can talk about your support and where you're working towards it, is when you see some teams that are on like the React Native side of things, you often see they're using like one or two screens in the application. They may not be using it for the full workload yet, where Xamarin, like, we're building our entire applications for the last like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years in it from the ground up. But Miguel and I announced something really interesting too, which is that we have developers that may have existing Java or Objective-C or Swift applications, right? We want to bring .NET to all of them. And we also talked a little bit more in the Xamarin Forms talk about Forms embedding. So we have the Embedinator 4000. It's amazing. It's one of my favorite pieces of technology. it's, what's that, two Ds. You take a .NET library, and it could actually have, it could be a Xamarin iOS library, including user interface code, but all of your .NET share library, and you compile that into a native library for Java, Jar, Objective-C, Framework, Swift, or C++, or something like that. So this means that any application could be could consume this today. So maybe you're in a company where you have legacy applications, but you want to move forward with Xamarin, and you're going somewhere else, but you want to start sharing code across all your applications. You can start injecting
.NET. That is a very common scenario. The common scenario is we run into a lot of teams, and that's why we build this, where they already have an Objective-C investment, or a Swift investment, or a Java investment. And yes, .NET is great, .NET is powerful, .NET has all these things, but they wrote this app for the last 4 years, and the idea of rewriting 4 years of code is insane. It's insane for everybody, right? So, but they still would like to get some of these capabilities. So what we built with Embeddingator is essentially a technology that allows you to write, start with one line of code of C#, maybe add 100,000 lines of code, or take some code from your existing project, and then we allow you to take all that code and insert it into a native app. Right, so this is a very common scenario, and as of today, we're very happy to be able to address it.
It's a huge win. I've talked to a lot of developers where they have Java and Objective-C teams only doing mobile apps, but they have an entire ASP.NET and services backend of all C#, and they're rolling out features so fast, their mobile team can't keep up.
This is the most ironic thing about the world we live in today, right? Yeah. We live in a world where C# is the premier language to write client code, and JavaScript is the most popular way people write back-end code, which is exactly the opposite of the way it was 10, 15 years ago, right? And that is a reality. I mean, it's, as these guys are saying, you know, use what's right for you, and there is no one answer, right? I was at Microsoft when we built .NET and C#. I sat right next to Anders in building 42. I love C# to death.
It's a nice building.
42 is the best building, man. But, you know, and so I'm a big, big fan of C#. But, you know, Mobile Center, we support React Native. We'll support Cordova in the future. And, you know, we have, I think, probably the best support for React Native when it comes to things like crash reporting of anybody out there. But we have really, really good support for Xamarin, partly because, you know, we're all part of one team, so it's very easy for us to collaborate on very in-depth features. But at the same time, we are trying to, you know, follow through on that thing we said last year, which was like, you know, any app, any developer, any platform, we want to meet you where you are from a services angle. And then obviously with things like the Embeddingator 4000, you know, we want to, you know, make you feel like you're completely locked into one choice, right? So you see that with things like Embeddingator on the client technology and what you're using there. We have that same philosophy on the server side too. So in Mobile Center, you can just use our CI and use somebody else's crash reporting. You can just use our crash reporting and our analytics, but somebody else's, you know, test cloud. We want people to use the best-in-class tool for the thing that they're working on, and there is no one answer fits everybody perfectly. And we recognize that, so we'd much rather just be, you know, offer these really flexible, easy-to-use tools. And that comes across in all of our decisions, regardless of like our own personal beliefs that JavaScript's a terrible language and you should always write C#. True.
Well, the one answer really is choice in Microsoft, right? It's like, if you go to Terry Myers and ask him whether he wants to use Windows or Mac, of course he says Windows, in the same way that Miguel wants you to use Xamarin, but Microsoft wants to meet you wherever you are today, whether it's in Teams services, whether it's in Mobile Center, whether it's in Skype. They try to meet you where you are and offer you the best solution coming from Microsoft, while you still retain whatever technology you prefer. And I think that's the power of the new Microsoft from my perspective.
And this thing about the technologies, it's very interesting because when we help customers with their apps, sometimes they say, hey, I have this problem, can you help me debug it? And they'll send us their project to look at it. The amount of third-party libraries that people use is amazing. I mean, you have this project that uses, you know, we get the projects with 50 components. Some talk to Amazon, some talk to Azure, some talk to Google Cloud. Some people have 5 or 6 different telemetry libraries. I don't know why, but people use 5 or 6 telemetry libraries in their applications.
Gotta collect them all.
Because the developer likes one, the marketing department likes another, the boss has proposed to use this
legacy,
one.
Right? So, you pull in a package that has its telemetry, pull another.
It's too risky to pull it out.
But, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, people are not building apps. They're certainly pristine apps, built, you know, by artists like me. No, I'm kidding. But people use a lot of these components, and they come from many different sources.
Yeah, if you open up, even if you open up the Xamarin Live Player app and go to the About section, you'll see I made the app when I give. I have a list of all the third-party libraries I use in it. In the Vault Conference app I built last year, there's 20 packages, NuGet packages in there from open source. I mean, half my application is not even, it's all libraries, you know what I mean? So I think what we want to do for me and for developers, we want to have the best tools, whether it's building tools with Xamarin, whatever we can control, whatever we can do, and we can support our developers. I mean, you guys know that.
I think at the end of the day, we want to make our tools good enough so that you feel very happy giving us money for your Azure services.
All right, with that.
I think we got it.
All right, so let's get on to the next question here.
Yep. Hi. First will be really short, I hope. I don't know. A year ago was presented something what was called Test Cloud Live. How it looks right now.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Is it dead or?
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Test Cloud Live was something we announced at Evolve last year. And it was an extension to Xamarin Test Cloud to let you do manual testing, actually what we call exploratory testing. So the short answer is we didn't ship it last year. And we're not going to really ship it this year. There's quite a few both technical and business challenges with Test Cloud Live. We've actually shipped it to some customers. And we've done a lot of work with customers kind of exploring, you know, in a preview manner, what is the right solution. And we're not going to just jump to something that we don't think hits both the quality bar and kind of the value bar that we see coming out of our division. And we haven't really seen that yet. And so we'll continue to kind of iterate with this idea, but we don't have a definitive timeline for when you should expect this.
Okay, we will stop waiting in this case. And second question is about open source, because, you know, from my perspective, let's say primary consumer of open source, but just little stuff of my own, it looks that most open source projects have some key team, doesn't matter if it's backup by company or it's a group of people, or pretty often it's just only one, two people, and if they will die or they just get married and say, okay, I'm stopped, the complete project died. What is your, Xamarin is open for 1 year. And your experience with this 1 year, is it something that, let's say, 90% or even more is still done by Xamarin people? Or is there, how many real changes? I know that every commit is good, even if it's just cleaning, but I mean, like, is there someone who do something really, not big, but let's say reasonable, and it's not connected to Microsoft, to Xamarin, or to some big companies. Is, you know, this is something what I wonder, because when I see even other projects, even like drones and stuff like this, in most cases there is sometimes it's a huge number of people, but in all cases, or almost in cases, it's backup by someone.
Well, I think you could probably talk about like Xamarin Forms, all of our Mono. I can talk.
Yeah,
to you
I mean, number lot. Wise, it's yeah. difficult to give you numbers because I'm flooded with information at this point. Anecdotally, I can pick some data. I don't know. It's a lot of things. It's difficult to judge, and also we have a lot of open source. There are things that are very mature and it's difficult to contribute to, and there are things that are very researchy and it's very easy to contribute to. So there's a spectrum, right? We've gotten great contributions to our 2D libraries, our 3D libraries, machine learning libraries. I mean, our components are very active, some parts of our Android and iOS SDKs, but Mono, I mean, it's anecdotal. Well, it's anecdotal. I talk to a lot of people that are contributing, but I don't know how that measures up against other things. It's hard to tell.
And I think a lot of people get worried, like, oh, this library hasn't been contributed to in a year. There's not been a new release of this NuGet in a year. And I go, yeah, well, maybe it's just done, right? Like, it's good, right? Like, how much more can you improve? JSON.net. I have no idea how James Newton King does it. He continues to improve that.
I think that is a good discussion. That's a good dinner discussion.
I look at we did plugins for Xamarin, which is a huge community initiative. And my NuGets and the ones that I've worked with other ones where we published together in a subset have like over nearly 3 million installs, right? Which is crazy. Like, I had no idea these things would ever be so popular. And then I look at the broader range when there's 5 million, 6 million, when you take all these community-driven plugins. So if someone dies, that's bad. That's why in my will that I've updated, I said, please re-give all of my GitHub repos to Miguel, and now he maintains them.
hopefully,
that's good. But I mean, it's a concern, but I think that it's the community, right? When I look at the entire amazing developers that are in this room, in this conference, online, like they're the .NET ecosystem of developers is the best out there. I love them. And beyond that, right, when you look at the JavaScript community, look at all these communities, like we're passionate about this. So when somebody else gets really passionate on a project, I had someone get so passionate about adding metadata to my image picker library that he just wrote like all the code. And then I was like, I was like, I like this, I don't like this. And we spent like a month on it to make it really, really great. And then I pulled it in. You know what I mean? And I think that that's what it is. We work together to make these things great.
But the thing to remember as well is, especially with open source projects that have a large corporate backing, oftentimes the place, if you're someone who's interested in contributing to open source, it isn't creating a very large pull request and just sending it in. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, adding issues, there's helping with documentation, there's just being a user. There's a lot of things that someone can do that contribute that don't show up as lines of code in a Git blame that are just as valuable.
My favorite is fix all of my spelling corrections, please. Like, and those are my favorite pull requests. Because I type so fast, right? And those are the best. Even an issue, you create an issue, and I see that first timer. GitHub's really good. It says first timer, just an issue. And like just doing that is a huge help, especially if you write a good issue.
Yes.
But even not, right.
And the thing is, like, I feel like one of the things I'm most proud of, at least with our division, if not a lot of Microsoft, is that we take the time to be welcoming for these things. Like a friend of mine added an issue to an open source project ran by one of our competitors. And last week, he did this 2 years ago, last week we finally got someone who responded to that issue and closed it, saying, oh, we don't want to do this. It was literally like one sentence, nah, we don't want to do it. And it was very disheartening. It took 2 years to get a no with no real explanation. And I don't see that really happening with Miguel's work. When you send Miguel an issue for an open source repo he's working on, Miguel's all over it. He's explaining to you, why he made the decision the way it is, or, putting it into the backlog and those kinds of things. So that engagement is, I think, something we're very proud of and we want to continue.
I'd say also, if you are working on a repo, contact that creator, whoever's maintaining it. And if your pull request doesn't get accepted, that's okay. Have a conversation around it. I did my first pull request to Xamarin Forms, and it took me like 2 or 3 weeks. I had to work and I had to learn their process. It's so interesting working in open source, is every team has different processes and this, and like, hey, you need to have this thing and this. And I was like, I want it in there so bad, I'm gonna do this, right? I did one to Mono Android. It was a cool feeling, but I worked with the team.
The worst contributors are the ones that download the software. They looked at the code and said, I don't like that coding style. And they run ReSharper or some other refactoring tool. Then they send you a pull request that says, cleaned up the code.
Don't do that. Yeah.
Those drive me insane.
Yeah. Rename
your variables.
Yeah.
Split the classes in files. There's all kinds of things like that.
My favorite is, this thing crashed. Here's a 18,000 line crash report. I'll put log. Put that in again.
The ones that drive me insane is I reformatted your code.
All right. Before we trash our developers anymore,
I don't know if we answered your question at all.
Okay. So just we changed with Miguel some few tweets some time ago about some crash course for new people which want to contribute to code to see at least some structure, how it looks. I know that on the code is written which code style I should follow and stuff like this, but if I download the Xamarin Forms, for example, code, and I know that I won't fix, some small stuff with bindings, which we have problem, I will put my time in it, but if I see the week before me just to find the where the bindings is managed. Is there something what is planned? I think you mentioned that it's maybe a good idea that have some, I don't know, screencast or something like this, how the code is structured.
There's two things I would say. First is read the documentation. We have open.xamarin.com, which was a beautiful website that points to all of your GitHub repos. But Scott Hanselman created this thing. It's called like first time committer. First time committer, yeah. Something like this. Yeah. And Scott, just tweet at him. Tell him James and Miguel sent you. And it's a great website, and it's actually open source. And it walks you through all of these processes. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So definitely check out that. It's first time committer or code committers or something like that.
First time committer.
Okay.
First time committer. Yeah. It's super cool. Definitely look at that or tweet it, Scott.
Thank you.
All right. Cool. Next up.
Yes. I have a question. I've been building apps for businesses, so business facing apps. And I was wondering, how is Visual Studio Mobile Center going to help me with distributing apps to my internal business instead of public-facing apps?
Thomas?
So I think we will help you in two ways, right? The one way is that you can test your apps with your clients before we roll it out. This is like the classic Hockey App feature.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, with our new build feature, you can actually do the build and test stuff on Mobile Center and Test Cloud. And then distribute it to your clients in a similar way that Hockey App did before. And then the other part is that we are not only building connectors into the store, but also into MDM systems. So Intune is Microsoft's own, but we're also looking into AirWatch, Mobile Iron, and those kind of competitors to Intune, and basically allow you to promote your build into the company portal of your client. And this way, basically, you have the full pipeline from build, test, distribute for testing, and then distribution for company rollout. And then, of course, you know, your clients similar, well, actually in a completely different way than the store are also collecting telemetry. And you don't see those in the store because you have no store listing, right? So Mobile Center then helps you to collect the telemetry about those apps in the wild.
All right. I haven't seen any sessions on Intune. Why is that?
Oh, Intune, yeah.
I believe that. Intune is regarded more as an IT level technology. So that happens, I believe, at a different kind of, I don't know the name
Ignite.
Of the conference.
Ignite.
So IT technology, that's why you don't see sessions on Exchange, right?
Yeah.
There's a set of sessions that are more, they're for a different crowd. They're not for software developers.
Yeah, but Intune, just, you know, if you, for instance, are a Microsoft customer and you're using Office 365, you get Intune as part of that as a business. And so not only do you have things like, you know, really great email for people and Word and Excel, Intune lets you basically have a corporate, app directory, right? It lets you securely deploy apps to your employees. You can turn them off. You can be secure. You can keep data from being seen by other apps on the phone. There's a bunch of things like that. And that's where that Hockey App, the Mobile Center kind of integration comes from. It's a great way to deploy the apps to businesses. Now, if your customers aren't using Intune, this would be a great opportunity for you to introduce them. We would love that.
Yeah.
And again, there's multiple ways that you can make that work, right? I think the key is that ultimately, let's say you're using Git to control your source code, you're probably going to have a branch somewhere called like prod. And when you merge code into prod after you've kind of validated this really great, we can make that seamlessly just show up on a user's phones through this distribution mechanism. Let's say you check into a feature branch, and you can have that just show up on your phone. Check into like a beta branch, you can automatically set that up to show up on all your beta testers. Check into prod, shows up in whatever your production environment is. And we want to take out all the hassle there. And so that's what we've built.
And if you want to make Mobile Center a production environment, you certainly can. Like, I mean, we don't really point out the tester role as a label. So if you want to just use Hockey App today to ship apps to your business customers, that already works. And we have both the public distribution and the private distribution. So you don't even have to sign them up to Hockey App. They can just get a link or QR code and download the file from Hockey App. I mean, this is what you do for LivePlayer too, right?
Yep.
Just literally, it's a AKMS LivePlayer or something.
Yep. Yeah, but then you would miss some security.
That is a philosophical question. My opinion is the security has to be in your app no matter what. because your IPA file, no matter where you put it, is not protected. There's no copy protection, no DRM, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. So the best protection for your app is in your app, whether it's the login page, whether it's AAD, whether it's Intune wrapping with MAM or MDM. Doesn't matter, but basically protect your app when logging into the app instead of protecting the file, because you cannot really protect the file anyway. Like, if you give me your file, I copy it on Dropbox or BitTorrent, and then everybody can download it from there. You don't need the protection in Hockey App or Mobile Center.
All right, thank you.
Awesome. Sure with it. From the right side.
Take one from the right. Oh my God! There's another side of the room.
Five people. Looking over.
Who are these people?
All right, from the right side.
I'm switching. Thank you.
Rapid fire.
So, being a consultant, we have to spin up prototype apps for clients all the time, and they may or may not use them. And we just kind of want to give them ideas really quick. I didn't know if you had any plans to make file new project more templates, like for common scenarios, maybe. Because right now there's two.
I cannot hear very well. I'm
sorry. So file new, different scenarios. So what we have to, so yes, in my grand vision, and Joseph can agree, look, here there's a big nod of yes, and they should be there. And we want to work actively.
I missed that piece.
So kind of templates of file new and common scenarios for file new projects. So not just blank app, but we have a master detail application today, which is kind of like data entry back and forth.
Yes.
But I think what we want to do is templatize other application scenarios like shopping or, you know,
yes,
app directory, things like that, tabbed applications.
What would you like to see?
Yeah, what would you like to see? That's what we want to know.
Those are good ideas, yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
All of them.
Well, yeah, and now we do have
We need your vote because we have a big argument. I've been saying we should do the shopping cart. Right.
That's a good one.
That's what I think. Mm-hmm. And Joseph says nobody uses shopping carts. Maybe. I'm trying to get a vote here.
But isn't the most important thing to allow people to storify their app? I think every app needs a story, right?
Mm. Right. Storify your app.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's most critical. Because Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram, they all have stories.
You got a story after
every app needs stories.
I think what we're hearing here is that we need a lot of user voice votes.
I like the idea, and we're having this discussion, and I believe in the shopping cart because all of my friends tell me that. But then Joseph goes, well, that's anecdotal evidence. Like, all right.
If you can email us, email or tweet at us.
This is really scientific.
Yeah.
One idea I actually thought was the plugins that you wrote was terrific. It's got, you know, the geolocation and all those other plugins.
Yeah.
If you had like a file new project, it's got all that stuff like baked in already. That would be totally good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We've got about enough time for, if we're quick about it, maybe two questions.
Well, so he's been waiting for a long time there.
Rapid fire.
So I wonder if you guys have some guidance on maintaining your development environment. I spend at least 2 days a month, updating and rolling back and having to swap things in and out to just maintain my app.
Who else does that? That's me. There we go.
It seems like quite a large overhead for, you guys push out updates every second week or something. I don't know how often it is. But, it takes a long time to keep your production apps working while you are, trying to maintain currency with what you guys are pushing.
Well, that's where Mobile Center comes in, and some production pipeline is, it's not your machines anymore.
Yeah, I think the ideal scenario that is an ideal, I think there's a lot of, this isn't perfect, is you're using Visual Studio or Visual Studio for Mac, you're using the Xamarin Live Player to kind of help you with that, what we call the inner loop at Microsoft of coding and debugging and whatnot. You have Macs, that you're using to sign and build. But if you have a great CI/CD pipeline, as you check in new code, you can always be sure that you're still making progress and moving forward so that you aren't as dependent on any one environment being crystallized and pure, because you're always going to have these kind of issues come up, right? But I don't think there's any one answer, just because in mobile development, Apple's moving, Microsoft's moving, Google's moving, there's a lot of pieces all at once, and the benefit is the billions of customers you get with your mobile app you know, that are there that you can get code everywhere.
Yeah.
But there is like a lot of people doing a lot of things at once.
There's a lot of things. Every time we update Xamarin to a large cycle, I do a blog post. It's like preparing your machines, and this is my recommendation setup where I've gone through all the hard work. I always tell everyone, just because it says update doesn't mean you have to update it the second it comes out. Like, give it a minute, you know. But you should have reliability. You should do that. But if you're in this production, you're like, hey, I got to go to production. I got to ship this next week. Maybe don't update your entire dev environment. I don't update it, you know, before things. But on updating, I'll say on a Mac, what's really helped me as a development on a Mac is using a Time Machine that I plug into my Mac. I have a 4 terabyte drive. I can literally roll back to any day and time, and it's amazing. And that is on constant loop 24/7 backing up my machine. Lifesaver, because I have accidentally deleted every bin and obj folder on my entire machine. Joseph knows, and it was terrifying.
I mean,
on Windows, I don't know. It's a little bit trickier.
Well, ultimately, I would say what you're saying is you have to embrace those updates because they're part of your life in the same way that you have to take out trash cans every Wednesday. You know, and you can, of course, skip it for a week,
but let me
add, you know what? Yeah. You have more trash the next week.
But 2017, so. 2017 has solved a lot of this, I'll say, where I'm installing a lot of preview bits all the time, and I need to roll back Xamarin. I go into the installer, uncheck it, open up Visual Studio, it's gone. I check it again, 30 minutes later, my life is good. So there's been, 2017 is a major fundamental shift. Now we can't control external SDKs like Google and Java. You gotta be the maintainer of that, but we'll do our darndest to make sure that those extension points don't break your machine. I've been really pleased with 2017.
All right, I'm gonna break us at that.
All right.
I want to make sure we've got one guy who's been super patient. Let's do the last one, and this is a 1 minute limit.
So let's talk more after.
Two quick questions. So the first one is, do you plan to have a mobile as a service, like a Parse, which was used to own by Facebook, and now it's open source, but yes? Time frame?
Well, you can already run Parse. You can run. Don't we have like a Parse runner?
Parse works in Azure, as does Easy Tables and Easy Auth.
Of course.
Yeah.
Do you guys plan to have your own version of Mobile Center?
So we have a mobile backend as a service roadmap today in Mobile Center. We already have data storage and authentication and push notifications as of like yesterday, I guess, available. So all Parse features.
Okay.
We will continue to expand and evolve that over the course of the next 12 months. Well, actually, forever we'll continue expanding and evolving that, right? Okay. But expect a lot of progress over the course of the next 12 months.
But let me add one thing. One of the biggest uses of Parse was storing data. It was simple to store data and retrieve data. I think that was one of the killer features.
Right.
And I have switched my life to DocumentDB. Well, now it's more powerful. It's Cosmos DB.
Mm-hmm.
But if it comes to storing data, retrieving data, querying data, and most importantly, querying data intelligently, right? So you don't know all the junk that you need, and you can do it page and all these things, really DocumentDB solves a lot of problems for you. I mean, I would definitely spend a morning reading through DocumentDB because it is a gift of the gods.
Or just read James's blog post.
Is DocumentDB like MongoDB?
Or what? Yeah, you
no
can
sequel?
Watch.
It's MongoDB too.
NoSQL?
Yeah, it's NoSQL. So go to XamarinShow.com. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weekly show I do on Channel 9. I was really creative with my title to show about Xamarin. Yeah. And then I bought XamarinShow.com, which redirects you to Channel 9. But I did a show with Carol, who's the PM of DocumentDB, and they talk about their cross-platform mobile SDK, where you can access ridiculous amounts of data extremely fast with DocumentDB.
All right. I got a second question, which is also probably...
Let's take it offline because we're...
Yeah, let's say that. So thank you so much. Well, come by, have a conversation with us afterwards.
We're here.
Everyone, thank you so much for attending. Enjoy the rest of the show, and tweet about it.
Thanks.
Love you. Thanks, guys.